This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
All right, Jennifer Graham, thank you so much, and welcome to WSMI Sports Saturday here on this gorgeous Saturday. And, Sean, we got a good show lined up today. We're going to have IHSA Assistant Executive Director Sean Knox joining us on the phone. Sam Knox, on the phone about 9:20 to talk about the officiating shortage. Gillespie softball coach Michelle Smith will be joining us as well. And we will talk with Litchfield girls track and field coach Shane Kress coming up on the program today. Sean Knox, I'm pretty sure he was a phenomenal athlete for North Green quite some time ago. Sean, apparently, is not there at the moment. So hopefully we'll catch back up with Sean in just a moment. So that is the lineup for today. Of course, earlier this week on Wednesday, there was history out in Anaheim as Reed Detmers pitched a no-hitter for the Los Angeles Angels. Just a surreal moment in time for Reed Detmers, his 11th big league start, and he tossed a no-no against the Tampa Bay Rays, no less. You know, it's not like some slouch. There's no such thing as a no-hitter slouch, of course, in professional baseball. But when you no-hit the Tampa Bay Rays, you have really accomplished something. And Reed Detmers tosses the no-no on Wednesday night. And just two strikeouts and one walk. So the pitch count stayed low, which allowed him to work, obviously, through that ball game and get it done. And there's just not many complete games anymore. Forget about no-hitters. He was just a walk away from a perfect game. But with the pitch count being low, it gave him a chance to go deep and got the no-hitter, a dream come true beyond belief, no doubt, for Reed Detmers on Wednesday night. Is Sean with us now yet? No? No Sean Boleyn. So Sean is working remotely, so hopefully we'll be able to catch up with Sean here in just a little bit on WSMI Sports Saturday. Of course, the spring sports season now is in the books after today as baseball and softball regional play will get underway beginning on Monday, and we will have coverage from the Carlinville Baseball Regional, or the Gillespie Baseball Regional, the Litchfield at Carlinville, live at 4:20 on Monday on WSMI FM 106.1, streaming online at WSMIRadio.com. Remember, the quarterfinal games played at the site of the better-seeded school, so it'll be Litchfield at Carlinville on Monday. The winner of that game will advance to Gillespie to take on the Miners in a semifinal game on Wednesday. We mentioned we'll have Michelle Smith coming up on the program later this morning as Gillespie is the number one seed in their subsectional. They are over in the Salem Regional, so we'll have their semifinal game on Tuesday. And then, of course, the Miners hoping to claim that regional championship and get to play at their own sectional beginning in a couple of weeks. So we'll talk to Michelle Smith about that coming up. And, of course, the girls' state track and field meet is coming up next week, and the Litchfield Lady Purple Panthers are headed there as the sectional champions. They've also got a number of individuals who qualified. We'll be talking to their coach, Shane Kress, coming up this morning on Sports Saturday. And I feel like I hear in my ear Sean Boleyn trying to connect, and I think he's connected, but I don't know that we can hear him or that he can speak on the radio. Doesn't sound like it. So maybe we'll get Sean later, maybe we won't. But what we do know is we're going to have Sam Knox coming up at 9:20 to talk about the official shortage, Michelle Smith to talk about Gillespie softball, and Shane Kress with Litchfield track and field. And this conversation with Sam Knox, a very important one, right? We've talked about the official shortage for a number of years. And this, I feel like this last, COVID certainly, I think, sped up what we're seeing now, but we knew that this was a situation that was coming down the pipe, and it really showed up, I felt, this whole school year from the fall all the way through now to the spring. We have finally begun to see the shortage of officials come into play, and the officials we do have, we're so thankful for them, so thankful, but they're getting stretched thin. I mean, getting stretched thin beyond really what is sustainable. They need the bullpen. right? I mean, any good team has the relievers waiting there, and right now the bullpen is extremely thin in Illinois, and you know Sam Knox he's kind of, I guess, on the scene trying to undertake this problem, and they had an officiating clinic, I guess, officiating 101 is what they called it, kind of for anybody who was interested in maybe pursuing officiating, getting into it. They were doing something. It was at Maroro Forsyth High School last week, totally free and just kind of a seminar to give people a layout of what it is, because there's probably a lot of misconceptions about maybe what it takes to become an official, what the process is like once you are an official. All of this matters. It's all part of it to get young people involved in officiating. And if we don't get young people, we know that eventually we're going to have a bigger problem than we had this past year. And I've seen it just, you know, the last couple of years traveling around with a traveling baseball team in the summer. You go to Indiana, you go to Iowa, you see young people, young umpires doing these games. And, you know, they're working their way up to the high school level, or in a lot of cases already doing high school games. But when you're in Illinois, you don't see young umpires or young officials even at some of these youth events. You, for whatever reason, in Illinois, it doesn't seem that the young generation is getting into officiating. It's not the case in Iowa, not the case in Indiana. I don't know if there's any, you know, state boundaries, what just artificial lines, but it seems that does to be the case right now, at least as I have noticed it in my small interactions. But Sam Knox will join us at 9:20 to talk more in depth about this. And there's only so much people in powerful positions can do, right? Like, it, at some point, people have to step up and decide that they want to do it. Like, you can have all the seminars you want, and we can talk about it till we're blue in the face on programs like this that we need officials. But, you know, if you put the call out or no one answers, you know, that's a problem, and it's not going to magically fix itself. This isn't something that's just going to poof, wake up one day and it's like, oh, look at that, we got just a brand new crop of young officials. It takes time. We just need the numbers to get there, and right now we just don't have it. And you know, there's a variety of reasons for it. I mean, probably the number one thing that people maybe think about, officials, we know it, they take abuse. Even at high school games, you know, I'm not talking about physical abuse, of course, but boy, just the things that get hurled at them from the stand, that some of it's nasty, you know, some of it's like, geez, like you're saying that in public, like that, it's hard to fathom sometimes some of the things that get said to officials. And when you see something like that, you maybe understand why people don't necessarily want to get into the business, so to speak. But that's one of the factors, I would say. But I think that certainly is maybe one that just pops in people's mind, is they know how they treat officials. It's like, I don't want to get treated like that. And when you talk to officials that have been doing it for a while, they'll tell you that there has been a change to where there was always, you know, people have always barked at officials since time immemorial. That's not new. But the level of it, I guess, has gone up in recent years. Maybe more of a personal nature to it, almost like society, perhaps. But that's just one of the, I think, at the forefront to where you think, boy, if they didn't take as much abuse as they did, then you factor in all the other things, you know, with the pay and the travel and all these things. There's so much that goes into it, but the list of cons, unfortunately, I feel like for people, if they just look at it on the surface, the list of cons is longer than the list of pros. While I would say if you talk to officials who have been doing it for a while, they would put more on the pro side than on the con side. But from the outside looking in, I think people see a lot of cons. And maybe that is, you know, the issue, that's the hurdle that has to be overcome here. And we'll talk with Sam Knox about all of it coming up here in just a few minutes on Sports Saturday. We need to get to a break. We will come back with more following these messages.
Thank you to some of the sponsors. They include Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond, Kurt's 24-hour towing in Litchfield, call 324-2400, Hillsboro Area Hospital, your front door to a world of health care, and Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville, taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms. Once again, we join WSMI's Tim Mize and Sean Bellent.
Maybe Sean Bellent.
Maybe.
Hey, there he is. Sometimes, Sean, it's like trying to catch like a wild critter with Sean Bellent. You put out the trap and you hope that he bites.
You know, they don't call me Carly Rae Jepsen for nothing. And everybody's saying, like, what? But if you're under 30, you remember that Call Me Maybe song. And I wish I didn't.
Well, but you do, though. Sean, you have joined us just in time. We're going to be having IHSA Assistant Executive Director Sam Knox here joining us momentarily to talk about the officiating shortage. And I was talking in the first segment by myself, but, you know, no, we'll deal with that
another
time.
I was there in spirit.
You were there in spirit. But
in the cave where no one could hear me.
That's right. You solved a lot of problems there by yourself, probably.
Oh, absolutely. Solved all the world's problems without even trying, as a band once said.
That's
Chicago.
That's exactly right. And unfortunately, this is a pretty big problem that's trying to be solved right now. And we're so happy to have IHSA Assistant Executive Director Sam Knox joining us on the phone. And Sam, thank you so much for joining us this morning to talk about really what has become a critical problem across the state of Illinois, a need for officials.
And no doubt about it, we're seeing the need for officials north, south, east, and west, and all across the country, really, for a variety of reasons. Unfortunately, people who are retiring at the end of their officiating career, we just don't seem to have the people who are entering the officiating world to replace those folks.
And Tim, I always use Jeremy Smith from our area as an example. When I started here, you know, 17 years ago, he was a young official. He was a young guy, and he's a good official. He's still the young guy. There's nobody younger than him that has come along, and, you know, he's just a couple years under 40.
Yeah, Jeremy's one of the best in your area, no doubt. I'll tell you a funny story. I referee some basketball as well, like Jeremy does, and I'll be 49 coming up on Monday, and I had a game last year over in Pekin, and I was the old guy on the crew at 48. We had a guy who was 45 and another guy who was 44, and we walked in the gym and someone commented, "We haven't ever had such a young crew for a basketball game." Hmm. And a young crew, we were all in our mid to late 40s.
Well, Sam, I was watching TV across the river out of St. Louis, and they did a piece on the Missouri side, these St. Louis suburban schools that had canceled baseball games, some games, in fact, more and more games have been worked with a one-man crew. Is that something you're seeing in other portions of the state?
Yes. I live real close to Bloomington, and we're certainly seeing it in this area. I know it's a common practice up in the northern part of the state, too, even in the Chicago suburbs where there are a lot of people, and you'd think we would naturally have a lot more officials. There are still many games that are happening with one umpire.
Sam, you guys recently had, I think it was called Officiating 101. It was at Maroro Forsyth High School. Talk about that. What was the attendance like at that event?
Well, we've had a little more than a handful, I think 7 or 8 Officiating 101 courses around the state this spring, all in an effort to introduce people to what it takes to be an official. How do I get started? How do I sign up? Where do I buy my gear? How do I get games? All those important things that officials need to know. I can't say that we were expecting standing room only crowds because we certainly didn't get those, but it's varied. I think the one at Maroro Forsyth had maybe 4 or 5 people. I hosted one here near Bloomington. We had 15 people, but you know, 15 I think has been the high. Most of them are averaging less than 10 people who show up, and that's with our effort of marketing that to all the high schools in that area and saying, "Hey, Mr. Athletic Director, hey, Ms. Athletic Director, please share this information with your parents and your coaches and your teachers and your students, that we need them to continue playing high school and junior high sports. Come out and find out what officiating is all about." So maybe with the turnout we've had, it kind of tells us where we're headed, unfortunately. And again, if somebody had the magic solution to this, we'd certainly be using it right now, but no state in the country has come up yet with what it takes to recruit hundreds more officials.
Well, Sam, I think maybe a lost opportunity, too. I remember growing up in Little League, and the older Little Leaguers would be paid to umpire for the younger Little Leaguers, and it almost was like a farm system. I don't know if that's kind of fallen out of vogue or not, but and Little Leagues certainly aren't what they used to be. We've seen some leagues go by the boards, and they seem to be a great feeder system over the years. And I say that in any sport.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I grew up in a little town of Ursa, Illinois, just north, about 10 miles north of Quincy on the far western side of the state. And that's exactly how I got my start in umpiring baseball. And I still do it today, but I was that volunteer older teenager who was volunteering to umpire the 10-year-old and 12-year-old ball games, and that's how you got started. I'm not so sure that all those hometown Little League programs still exist. Not many of them do. A lot of kids have elevated to the travel teams and the other teams that play, or some kids just don't play anymore, unfortunately. So, but you're right, that's the farm system that we need to tap into if those people are interested in growing their officiating skills and becoming a junior high or a high school or even a college official someday, because we certainly need them. And it's easy to say this, but it's absolutely true. If we don't have officials, the games can't happen, unfortunately.
Talking with Sam Knox, the IHSA Assistant Executive Director, about the need for officials. And I think we've all been at a baseball or softball game in the spring with, you know, the early start times of 4:30 where everybody's ready to go. And, well, what are we waiting for? Well, the umpires aren't here yet. Oh, well, yeah, we can't start until we have umpires. And, Sam, I think I don't know what can be done to impress upon younger people that they need to step up. I mean, the numbers you talked about at those clinics, that's low. I mean, that is shockingly low that there's that few people that are interested.
Yeah, I was surprised as well. We were certainly hopeful for more people, and we're not going to give up. We can't give up. We have to keep recruiting and working with our schools and our officials in our areas to help recruit new people. But we hear a lot of reasons why people stay with officiating, but we also hear a lot of reasons why people don't stay with it or don't even want to start. And sadly, a big piece of that is sportsmanship and inappropriate comments from coaches or players or certainly some parents who are way over the line in their comments toward umpires. And people have to remember, this: we are at the epitome of amateur sports. You know, how much percentage of these high school students are going to go on to play college sports? Very low percent. Most of these kids who are playing high school sports, this is the best sports experience they're ever going to have. And for many of them, when they graduate high school, that's the end of their sports career. And for these umpires and officials who go out and do what they love to do, they're amateurs too. They're getting paid $60, $70, certainly not more than $100 to officiate these games. They're doing it because they love the sport. They have a full-time day job. They work their tails off for their families and their wife and their kids, and they do this in their own time to give back to our schools, and yet sometimes people still treat them very poorly. I'm talking from, you know, the sportsmanship standpoint. And sometimes they get to a point where saying, hey, I'm devoting hours of my life studying the rule book, buying my equipment, committing some time and energy and money to this to try to have some fun at this, and if you're going to treat me like that, I'll find something else to do with my time. There's other hobbies I can have, hunting, fishing, golf, whatever you name it. But many of these people, their hobby is officiating. And you guys go out to ball games and you see the same guys and gals over and over. And some of them you'll see on a football field in the fall, you see on the basketball court in the winter, and you see on a ball diamond in the spring, and they absolutely love it. But we just don't have as many of those people as we used to. And I think some of our young people just say, you know what? I've seen enough of those crazy stories on the news. I've seen enough of those stories where, you know, youth soccer official is attacked by a wild parent in Texas or something like that, and they're going, no way, I don't want to sign up for that. But we got to remember, there are thousands of games that happen around the country every day where things go the way they're supposed to. Team A, Team B, the officials, everybody has fun. There's no controversy. Nobody's screaming at each other. Nobody's getting attacked. It's just a fun ball game the way it's supposed to be. We have a lot of those happening every single day, and we need more people to get involved as officials so we can keep that trend going.
Hey, you know, Sam, I think something that's interesting in mentioning all of that, you talk about incidents elsewhere, something might happen at a JFL game in California, and there's a certain percentage of the population, and I guess a certain percentage of the younger population, they relate to what they see on their tablet to their world, which, you know, it's like the local situation's a different animal. I guess that's one of the things you have to get through, too, is that, hey, something that happens here or there that doesn't represent what happens within 100 miles of your front door.
Well, I've said this many times recently. We are really fortunate that the folks in the media, like you guys and many others, are highlighting the fact that we need officials. That's great to have that out in the media. It's great for people to read about it in newspapers and online and on the radio, et cetera. That helps us a bunch. But the stories that don't help us are those stories that you and I just mentioned where an official is attacked or something happens and it becomes a national news story for 2 minutes on the Today Show and people think, oh, that's really what officials have to put up with? No. That's an extremely rare case when it's gone really, really wrong and nobody wants that to happen. But as you and I both know, there are lots of junior high, middle school, high school games that happen every day where people leave the field and they had a good experience. It was fun. Whether they won or lost, it was good sportsmanship. It was the way it was supposed to be, and that's what we're looking for.
Talking with Sam Knox, the IHSA Assistant Executive Director. And, Sam, I think if you had a pro and con list for folks who have been officiating for a long time versus folks who maybe want to but are scared to officiate, I think the officials list has more on the pro side than the con side, and I think people who are maybe hesitant to get into officials just see the con list as very big and the pro list very small.
You know, no one has really ever put it that way, but that's a brilliant statement you just made, and you're absolutely right. The pro list way outnumbers the con list, and some pros that come to mind right away are a chance to meet some new people. I mean, officials develop friendships with their own officiating buddies, with coaches, with athletic directors. There's new friendships formed there every day. There's a chance to challenge yourself and learn the rules and apply the rules of the sport. There's a chance to move up the ladder, so to speak. You know, a guy like a Jeremy Smith you mentioned earlier, he started somewhere many years ago doing middle school girls basketball games and has worked his way up to being a very well-respected official in your area working postseason. He's just one example of guys in your area, I know that. There's a chance to earn some pretty significant money, if you want to look at it that way. It's not all about the money, but, you know, there's guys who referee and umpire and make thousands of dollars every year because they're active and they're out there doing their thing. So I can't think of a better hobby, mm-hmm. if you like sports and want to stay involved, where you can actually bring home a paycheck from your hobby. I tease people who play golf. I tease people who go hunting and fishing and spend a lot of money on equipment to hunt and fish. They don't bring a check home at the end of the day. Now, they get some other things out of their hobby, no doubt about it. But refereeing, umpiring, going to a JFL football game or a high school game, you're bringing home a check, and that adds up pretty quickly. So those are just a few of the pros of it. And naturally, just a chance to stay involved in the high school sports atmosphere. There's nothing better than a gym full of people on a Friday night or a football game between two rival schools or a postseason softball game or track meet that just gets the energy going. And it's really a fun place to be a part of that, knowing you're helping make a difference for all those kids at that event. They don't know you. You don't know them. You'll probably never talk to them or see them in Walmart, but you help them have a really good high school experience, just like somebody helped you have a high school experience back when you were an athlete back in the day.
Well, Sam, I have to think this is an underrated aspect, especially for a young person. I just think this is a world where, you know, people will say something on a screen, won't say it in person. Conflict resolution, so to speak, gets a little more difficult. Diffusing a situation becomes a lost art. To me, I think a young person can learn a lot. And, you know, like we say about the military and other things, you take the lessons learned and you take them to the workplace. You take them to your marriage. You take them, to some kind of leadership in the community or your church, whatever the case may be. Umpiring and refereeing has a lot of benefits for personal development.
It sure does. sure does. And the things you just mentioned, conflict resolution, people skills and getting along with people from different backgrounds, and managing tough situations and knowing that, okay, coach, you and I disagree, but here's the way the rule is, and this is the way it's applied in this situation. And I know you don't like it, but we're going to have to move on and play the rest of this game, even though this tough call might have gone against your team. I mean, think of the things in life where things happen that we really don't like, or we have to get through conflict, or we have to figure out tough problems. All that really rises to that level as an official as well. And it's just a great avenue for people who love sports to stay involved. And, you know, we've got some people who get involved and stay with it for 4 or 5 years, but we've also got some people who stay with it for 40 or 50 years. And God bless those who do. We're fortunate to have them. We just would like to have more of them, no doubt.
I always tell officials when I see them, hey, thanks for doing what you do, but you're not allowed to retire. I'm sorry. You can't retire at this point in time. And talking about diffusing, Rich Stewart tells a hilarious story. He was doing a ball game, and a coach was just on him, up one side and down the other. And Stewie just calmly turned around to him and said, Coach, this is my best stuff. You ought to see me on an off night. And the ability, Sam, for officials to diffuse situations, like Sean was just alluding to, conflict resolution, that so many of the officials, that is the best skill of an official in a lot of ways.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I tell people this all the time because I'm an official myself. I've been licensed in basketball for 25 plus years and baseball for 25 plus years. But people may not agree with me and they may not believe me, but it's absolutely true. In those pregame locker room discussions or pregame getting dressed at your trunk of your car in the parking lot before a softball or a baseball game, the umpires, they talk about situations on how they can do their very best job. No one ever says, hey, Mike, hey, Bill, let's go do the worst job we can. Let's really screw this up tonight and do a bad job. Nobody ever says that, but sometimes situations happen where it looks like maybe the umpires don't know the rules as well as they should, or maybe a weird situation happens they've never had before. And people, what's wrong with you? How come you can't figure this out? Well, you're the worst. You're terrible. Well, believe me, they're not trying to be terrible. They're trying really hard to get it right. But again, they're amateur officials, just like the kids and coaches are amateurs out there too. And we know that players miss free throws. Heck, players miss wide open layups sometimes. Players drop pop flies. Players fumble the football. They're human. Officials are human, too, and sometimes they do make mistakes, but they don't try to. And the hard part about officiating is people expect them to be perfect the first game they ever do. You better be perfect or real close to perfect and then get better in your career after that. Because when you walk out there for your very first game, nobody knows it's your very first game of your life. And all eyes are on you. You're doing your best. And I boil it down to three simple things. You can be a good official if you know the rules, if you use a lot of common sense, and if you apply really good people skills. Because sometimes you may not know the rule as well as you do or as well as you should, but if you use some good people skills, you can get through some tough situations with, hey, coach, I think I missed that one, and I probably did miss that one, but I'm going to look it up in the rule book. I'll get back to you. So if I have that situation again down the road, I'll get it right the next time. And when you tell that to a coach, there's not much else he or she can say as well. Okay, hey, he's being honest. He says he might have missed it, and life's going to have to go on. We're going to have to continue playing this game. So officiating is a wonderful way to stay involved with high school sports. Yes, it's much, much harder than just going to the local high school, sit in your spot in the bleachers, and watch the game like a lot of people do. But if there's any of your listeners this morning who've ever thought about, I've heard about this official shortage. I really know and like high school sports. Maybe it's time for me to get involved as an official because my schools in my area need people like me. Now's the perfect time to sign up. They can get to a clinic this summer. They can start training this summer, start learning the rules and getting their gear and buying their shirts and their hats and all that stuff it takes and start getting games on their calendar for the coming school year, because I get emails every single day with lists of baseball and softball games that need coverage. And some of them say, we need at least one person here or this game can't happen. Mm. And I don't know anybody in their right mind who wants to see high school games canceled because they don't have officials. So folks who are interested can call the IHSA office. They can contact a local official in your area who they might know and say, how do I get started with this? We are glad to help them get started.
You know, the fitness aspect, too, I think is really another great part of the story. I know there are people who are not treadmill people, that repetitive kind of exercise on a stationary device. They like that kind of old school sense of, you know, just going out there and getting exercise through some kind of pursuit. I think of my buddy Jason Unverzot calling football games, and it's one of the things that helps him keep up with the young guys at a firehouse. I mean, if you're looking to do it 20, 30 years and you're not somebody who just enjoys going to the gym, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, long-term health.
Yeah, we hear that a lot from officials. You know, when we ask them reasons why they stay with it, that's one of the big things is the exercise. And they jokingly say, hey, and we're getting paid to exercise. you're right. And they really enjoy that, getting out, getting up and down the court, you know, running up and down a football field, as you mentioned. And it's a healthy way for them to stay involved in the high school sports world.
Sam Knox, Assistant IHSA Executive Director. And just a few more minutes, and we really appreciate your time here this morning, Sam. A very important conversation. And let's just talk a little more specific sport by sport here in terms of as we move in to the fall. Obviously, football requires more officials than other sports. All the games concentrated really on Friday night. Are we going to start to see high school football games played on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and maybe even more days throughout the week?
A very short and direct answer to your question is yes. We are already seeing some schools moving games off of Friday night because of one reason. They can't find officials. All the officiating crews are booked. There aren't enough guys out there to officiate their games. So if we move this game to Thursday, we've got a crew lined up right now. If we move this game to Saturday afternoon or Saturday night, we can get a crew. So that concerns me as well, because in the old days, a lot of football crews would have one varsity game every week, and that was a Friday night game. But now, some of our crews, and as we all get older every year, some of our crews will have a Thursday night game, a Friday night game, maybe a Saturday afternoon game, and maybe some of them will even have a Saturday night game. They could do three or four varsity games in one weekend, where they used to just do one. And that might sound like fun, because a lot of us think that more is better. But I worry about the guys in their 50s and 60s who might get injured, might get burned out, might say by week 7 or 8, okay, this is too much. I don't want this much football in my life. I just signed up to do one game a week, and now I'm doing a bunch. So that's a problem, too. We've got to balance that out of trying to play all the games but keeping our officials fresh so they can finish the year strong in weeks 8, 9, and on into the playoffs, too.
Well, Sam, thank you.
Sam, you went. Oh, shut up. No, go ahead. That's fine.
Oh, go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to say, with all the outrage video and everything, and people perceiving that the referees and umpires aren't appreciated, it seems like, and I think it shows up in the interviews we've had recently, even a coach who might bark at you a time or two during the game, the appreciation is kind of soaring like inflation.
It is. And you know what's funny is, some of our most veteran coaches in the state, football, basketball, you name it, some of those guys who've been around forever, they are coaching legends. Yes, sometimes they are very critical and hard on officials during the game. But as soon as that game's over, they will readily admit officiating that game is probably the hardest job in the gym. It's harder to officiate than it is to dribble a ball and shoot a basket. It's harder to officiate than it is to pitch and bunt and run the bases. It's a hard job, and those coaches know that, but when they're in the heat of the moment, they're competitive, they think that this call is going to maybe change the outcome of the game, and they get on those officials sometimes, but they're very quick to pat them on the back too and thank them for what they do, because those veteran coaches know, hey, we can't play these games without them. I've got to keep them on my side. I've got to, you know, develop that friendship and relationship with them, even though we both know that during the moment, I might bark at them a little bit, but it's not personal. It's not as if I hate that individual person. He's just the guy wearing the stripes and has the whistle in his mouth, and he made that call that I thought wasn't right, and I'm going to let him know. But next time down the floor, I might pat him on the back and say, hey, good job, keep going, you're doing a great job. So you're right. The appreciation is out there. It needs to continue to grow. And as we recruit and look for more officials, they need to know that, you know, not every game is going to be exciting and fun and want to come back and do it again. But I kind of equate it to the roller coaster effect. Remember when we were younger and you go to Six Flags or you go to the county fair and you ride that ride and you get off that ride and you're like, ooh, that was fun. I want to do that again, and I want to do that as soon as I can. Get back on that roller coaster and ride it again. Officiating can be like that. You have a game on a certain night, and, man, that atmosphere was wonderful. It was a fun game. Everything worked the way it was supposed to. I want to do that again tomorrow night. But sometimes when you ride a roller coaster, you get off and say, oh, boy, that was not much fun. I'm not sure I want to do that again. And some games are like that as officials, too, where they walk off the court going, oh, man, that one kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. It wasn't much fun. Maybe we missed a call here or there. And not sure when I want to get back on that saddle and ride that horse again. But officials come back. They love it. We just need more of them. And as I said, people who are listening can simply call the IHSA office or talk to their local athletic director or a local coach that they know. How do I get started as an official? There are lots of people who are eager to help you get started because, quite frankly, we need people to help us keep this going.
Sam Knox, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Sports Saturday, and hopefully the call to action will start sooner than later because it's desperate right now. We have to have new officials. Sam Knox, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a nice weekend.
All right, that is IHSA Assistant Executive Director Sam Knox joining us here on Sports Saturday. And Sean, that's just real talk right there.
Oh, wow.
That's just real talk.
That may be the best stuff I've ever heard out of Bloomington. He was tremendous, frank, and honest. I loved it. That was great stuff.
We need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. On the other side, Gillespie softball coach Michelle Smith when Sports Saturday rolls on.
Thank you to Sports Saturday sponsors. Without them, we couldn't bring you this program every week. Thanks to these sponsors. Mark Stern, your State Farm agent in Litchfield, Nancy's Pizza in Litchfield, Prairie Town Feed Service, they're serious about their service, and Gerald's Auto Body and Repair. See Joanne Gerald doing it right since 1982. Once again, here's WSMI's Sean Valent and Tim Mize.
All right, Jennifer, thank you very much. Cardinal baseball today, 1220 AM, 1540 FM, 106.9 and 92.9. Of course, starting next week, we'll have regional baseball and softball coverage on WSMI. We'll have Litchfield at Carlinville baseball on Monday, Gillespie softball from Salem on Tuesday. We'll have Gillespie baseball regional coverage on Wednesday, and then after that, we will see how the schedule shakes itself out. But Michelle Smith, Gillespie Minor softball coach, set to join us here in just a few moments on the program as they are the top seed in their subsectional, and they are off to the Salem regional for a semifinal game on Tuesday. They will get the winner of Flora and Lawrenceville. That'll be a quarterfinal game played on Monday. Gillespie will get the winner on Tuesday. That's a game we'll carry live on WQSMI FM 106.1. And if Gillespie can find a way to win that Salem regional, they'll be headed to the Gillespie sectional. And that's just a beautiful venue, great diamond to have a sectional, and the Gillespie Miners hope that they will be playing on the sectional on their home field. But work to do before they get to that point, and head coach Michelle Smith joins us on the phone right now. And Michelle, I know you and Jeremy, you're always at a ball diamond somewhere.
Yeah, I think he's out at his this morning, and we're set to go watch my daughter play this afternoon in O'Fallon. So yeah, we're always at a field somewhere.
And you're going to be at a field in Salem on Tuesday, and you're the top seed in your subsectional. And, Michelle, it's been just a dynamite year for minor softball, and you closed it out in a nice way with that win over Calhoun. Classic 1-0.
Yeah, it was a good pitcher's duel, but honestly, it really came down to good defense, you know, on our part, I think, and some timely hitting and get that run, and then play solid defense behind Emma's pitching, and they got the job done yesterday. So it was good to see a win going into the postseason.
Well, you know, Coach, I kind of stepped in it. I asked your assistant for the lineup just because she looks so busy. I don't want to bother her. I love watching you, Coach. I mean, it's like a basketball coach working the whole coaching box. You're in the infield, you're hands on. Is that just a self-learned approach, or is that just is that something that was inspired by someone else in your past?
You know, I had a great relationship with my high school coach. You know, he always pushed me to be better. And I think, you know, with being a teacher as well, I just hope to, you know, have good relationships with the kids, try to encourage them when I can and get on them when I need to. And, you know, becoming a mother, I think that's changed over the years as well. So, you know, but I just, you know, staying in the game and doing everything we can to give us a chance to win. So, you know, whatever we need to do to make adjustments and help those guys succeed, that's my goal. So,
well, Emma Gibson has given you guys a lot of chances to win this year, freshman. And, Michelle, where does – I mean, you've had some really fantastic pitchers through. Where does her freshman season here compare to what you've seen? Because this was, in a lot of ways, kind of a ready-made team. She steps right in.
Yeah, you know, she we knew what she could do from middle school. She was in the first, when we started the program, she was in seventh grade and was our pitcher there. So for seventh and eighth grade, and then, you know, her freshman year, she decided to stay with her select team. But we knew, you know, we knew what she could do. We know what she's been doing in the summer and her off time, working hard to get better and improving, and you know, against good competition. And so, you know, we were confident that she would do a good job. You know, we have a couple other young kids, you know, in the background pitching too, and working hard. And so, you know, yeah, I've been blessed with great pitching, and that makes it way easier for sure.
Well, Chloe Segura over there at short, the lone senior, is that almost like another coach on the field?
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of a quiet kid, and you know, but she gets the job done, and she's a good representative of, you know, playing solid defense and working hard to get better, and always, you know, always complimenting her teammates and knowing that it's not just a one-man game. So, you know, great kid, and she's had some great defensive plays this year. So happy to see that with Chloe and putting the ball in play and, you know, getting on when we need her to and scored, you know, was on base to score the run yesterday on Wrigley's sack fly. So, you know, good things out of her always.
Michelle, of course, this is a program and a team they expect to be playing deep in to the month of May. And as you look here at the postseason draw, I know it's one game at a time, but you're the top seed and you're subsectional. Your overview.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're the long drive to Salem was a little bit of a shock for the girls, but, you know, we definitely got a good draw in that sense. So, you know, you have to – it's always – it's a little bit different look for us this year going against some different teams that we typically don't see. But I'd say looking overall, I think we got a good draw, and we just have to take a little bit longer bus ride to get there. So, you know, we're hoping to have a good run and then be home to play in a sectional. So that's the, you know, one game at a time, like you said, always. But, you know, hoping that we're home playing in that sectional again on our own field.
Well, you brought up Emma moments ago. 20-win season, an unbelievable performance, but the bat has gotten better and better for her.
Yeah, you know, I think she's a little surprised of some of her offensive production, but, you know, again, you know, all these kids work hard on it, and they're really, over the season's progression, they've made a lot of good adjustments, and we're trying to, keep preaching to them about working on their weaknesses and just continually getting a little bit better every day to make sure we're hitting on all cylinders when we get into the postseason. So, but yeah, she's definitely helped her two hits yesterday, and you know, gave us that, you know, run, and like I said, Wrigley's sack fly and Chloe being on, and that was, you know, all we needed to get it done. And then her solid pitching performance, that was great. So, and again, like I said, it takes a team effort. So they've, you know, all of them have been, you know, off and on hitting and producing. Even the bottom lineup of has been producing when we need them to, when the top's not. So I'm very proud of them. They're doing a great job.
Well, Michelle, as you are well aware, when you get into one-and-done playoff scenarios, you love that lineup depth because you never know what part of the lineup is going to be up at that critical moment.
Yeah, you just don't. And, you know, we see it time and time again where, you know, somebody's just off that day that you expect to, you know, have, you know, hitting for you. And, you know, it's somebody else that comes up and, you know, does what needs to be done. And so it's just really important that, you know, that they're all working on it and moving the ball. So we preach that a lot about, you know, getting base runners on and moving the ball and putting us in a better position to score runs. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, sometimes the stars shine and sometimes it's the least expected kids that get it done. So we just want to make sure we're all prepared.
That's quite a season, and you get through the struggles, and I know brain outs are tough on the team, but that's one of the things that struck me when I worked the game over in Hillsboro, which wasn't much of a game, four outs. Seeing the fans and, you know, the softball parents, and, hey, they're not just there rooting for their kid. I mean, they are quite a fan base.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it takes parents spending lots of hours on ball fields, you know, from little ages up to get to where we are. And so, you know, they definitely are a great fan base, and they – you know, follow us wherever we go, and we had a great showing yesterday in Calhoun, and even when we're away pretty far, we always have, you know, our parent support, so that's great to see. You know, that says a lot for why we are continually where we're at. You know, a lot of parents have to go out and play catch and pay for pitching lessons and hitting lessons and, you know, get their kids out there on the field and spend lots of money on bats and gloves and all those things that come along with a sport. So, you know, we're definitely very appreciative of that, so.
Michelle Smith, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time. We'll let you get to Jillian's game. Sean will be making the trek with you to Salem, but don't wait. Don't hold the bus for him, because you'll be waiting for a long time, but he'll be there eventually.
I don't want to get on her bad side, and I will not ask your assistant for the lineup.
That's all right. I don't mind. Yeah, we're ready for a bus ride on Tuesday. Luckily, we're out of school now, so they can focus on softball and getting it done, and so we'll take a nice bus ride to Salem and be ready to go. But thanks, guys, for your time this morning.
All right, Michelle Smith, thank you so much. The Gillespie Miners softball coach joining us here on Sports Saturday. And, yeah, she likes to draw, Sean.
Oh, that's good. You know, I just love watching her coach. And it's kind of like watching, like, Nick Saban stroll the field before an Alabama game, you know, clapping and just kind of seeing all things at once, just her view of the game and her intensity. She's a real treat to watch. It's not just the impressive resume. It's just her style that really, really makes it fun for me to watch the Miners in action.
She's fantastic. We'll have the Miners on the radio Tuesday. They'll get the winner of Flora and Lawrenceville in that regional semifinal at Salem. You can find our broadcast schedule for Regional Week, WSMIRadio.com. We need to get to one more break here on Sports Saturday. Sean, as Tito liked to say, we're going into extra time today. The Litchfield girls track and field team won the sectional earlier this week, and we're going to be talking with their head coach, Shane Kress, when Sports Saturday continues. All right, Jennifer Graham, thank you so much. We are in extra time here on Sports Saturday, and earlier this week, the Litchfield Lady Purple Panthers won the track and field sectional at Gillespie, and their head coach Shane Kress joins us on Sports Saturday. And Shane, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time this morning, and you're going to have a fun, busy week coming up.
Yeah, I am. Thanks a lot for having me.
Talk to me about the thrill of winning that sectional championship, because when you win the team event and a track meet, boy, does that just speak to your depth.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a lot of fun. The sectional track meet is always an interesting kind of meet, because on the one hand, you know, it's designed to get kids to advance to the next level. You know, it's a state meet as individuals, but it is still a team competition. And I think that getting the girls to really buy into that aspect of it, to really commit to races and to events, even if, you know, on paper it doesn't look like they really have a chance of advancing to state, you know, I try to drill into them that, like, as a team, like, we need everything that we can get out of every single event. And I think they gave that to me.
I don't know if you maybe made a mistake, Tim. I think this may have been at Litchfield Municipal Airport, because I'm looking at Kendall Stewart's times. I mean, a sophomore, boy, tremendous to get that double win, coach, in the 200 and 400.
Yeah, yeah. Kendall ran a great meet. She was, the 100 was very competitive at our meet this year, but she went out and really kind of stamped her authority on the 200 and the 400. And the 200 is something she started running again a little bit lately, and we decided to go with that over the 4x4 with her, and she had a great race.
So Kendall doubles up the 200 and the 400 meter. Then you look at other kids you've got going to state, Carly Gwynn going in the high jump, Kylie Iding going in the 3200, and then Carly also going in the 300 meter hurdles. Then you had a couple of relays, what, your 4x1 and your 4x8. So you've got a nice collection here individually that got themselves qualified. Such a big deal, such an enormous accomplishment.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Yeah, I think we've got 7 events going. And, you know, Carly was 2nd in the high jump and 3rd in the 300 hurdles. But those were very competitive events at our sectional. I think right now Carly is holding on to, like, 7th or 8th best in the 300 hurdles after the sectional results are almost all in. Winnebago has mentioned those this morning, and I think she's tied for 5th in the high jump right now after sectionals going in. So that was great. And Kylie Iding, you know, just a quick mention of her. I mean, she ran first in the 4x8 to help the 4x8 qualify, and then turned around 10 minutes later and qualified in the 3200.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a very tough performance. It was very selfless, very team-oriented. She was just tremendous at the sectional meet.
I wonder what her 4,000 time was.
Say that again?
I was just being sarcastic. I wonder what her 4,000-meter time was for the day.
her 4,000.
Yeah, I was just being stupid. But
yeah, I got you.
But you talk about the mentality of an athlete for track and field, like what Kylie did right there. That is pure mental in that 10-minute window.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, we iced her down and we tried to do everything that we could physically, because, you know, I mean, on a normal day, that's difficult to do in 87 degree heat. It's very difficult to do, and so we tried to do everything we could physically, because I was worried about it. She had sort of decided to do that, and I wasn't sure about it in the heat, but she, you know, looked me in the eye and said, "No, coach, I want to give it a shot." I said, "Okay, just, we can't heat stroke here. Like, if I think I need to pull you during the 3200, I'm going to pull you." And she's tough. She's a tough runner, and she had gotten on top of it mentally far before the meet started. So I was very proud of her and the way that she handled that mentally, especially. Yeah, for sure.
And coach, I have to think it's just one of the more gratifying things in coaching. You know, kids picked up a baseball, a bat, and glove when they were 5 or 6, threw a football around when they were 7, and you know, sprinters. They just, you know, some of them just have natural speed, like a 3-year-old horse at the Kentucky Derby. It's just, it's in it, and it shows up in the 100, 200, 400 when you have a sophomore winning 2 of those, a freshman winning the other. But something like the hurdles, something really unnatural, and something that takes a little bit of courage, running, jumping, and keeping at it, and fighting whatever maybe, I don't know, fear would be the word, but just growing, seeing that growth. It has to be really gratifying, and certainly you saw success in those events.
Yeah, for sure. It is one of the things that, you know, it's one of the reasons I love track and field so much, because the input has a direct correlation to the output. You know, the work that you put in, you can see it come out the other side with times and distances, and, you know, you can see the hard work. Even in the sprints, you know, as you know, the hard work pays off through the season, and our 4x1 team just got faster and faster and faster every time we ran, just about. Just definitely seeing kids go and kind of be courageous. You know, Carly Gwynn picked the hurdles back up again this year. Lily Barash ran the 4x4 one meet because I needed someone to run it, and I didn't tell her until we got off the bus for the meet that day, and she stayed in it the whole rest of the season. So just seeing girls kind of do that and get outside of their comfort zone and just work hard is definitely super, super fun.
Shane Kress, Litchfield girls track and field coach, joining us here this morning as they won the sectional earlier this week at Gillespie. But Shane, you also won the conference championship meet a few weeks ago, and I know that's a nice feather in the cap.
Yeah, it is. You know, interestingly, So this is my 15th year coaching high school girls. It was the fourth sectional championship my teams have won, but only the second conference. Pena has had a sort of a death grip on the conference for the last 6, 7, 8 years that I have not been able to shake loose. And, you know, before that, Gillespie had a 3-year run. And then we kind of traded around a little bit before that. But for the last, 10 or 11 years, it's been two teams that have dominated the conference. And so that was a big one. That was nice. It was nice to get another conference championship there for sure.
Well, I know I was a shot put and discus guy myself back in the day, and I know it's an interesting sport as far as potentially long bus rides, and there's a little bit of waiting around. Unique that way, you're not sitting on a bench, but you know, waiting to see, hey, this crew's working discus. They're coming over to shot put here in a minute. Those relays really have to be a great unifying event as far as kind of building the energy to get through the grind. A special lift for the team when they get the medals.
Yeah, for sure. The relays are probably my favorite event, just because of that. Because they are the event that does sort of capture the team aspect of the sport, and it is kind of a weird sort of disjointed kind of sport where you've got these people over here doing their thing, and it might be, you know, 200 or 300 or 400 meters away, someone else is over here doing this other thing, and it's a very individual kind of thing, even though it's a team kind of thing. And the relay definitely kind of helps bring that team aspect to the forefront for sure.
Jane, we'll get you out of here on this. What does the week look like here getting ready for this meet? There's no experience for the kids quite like qualifying for state, going up to Eastern, staying in the hotel. The whole weekend is just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Yeah, it is, and we should be back to normal this year. So we'll practice at the school Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday. We actually have finals, and so the kids are out early, so we'll be able to leave earlier than we usually can. And so we'll load up the van, and we'll head to Charleston Wednesday afternoon. And we always get a practice in that Wednesday afternoon or that Wednesday early evening, so they just kind of get the sense of that big blue track and those facilities. And then we head out to eat, and we usually stay in the dorms that night. And then Thursday, you're there, the fans are there, all the people are there, the big announcers there, and it's game on. And then we will for sure be going back on Saturday, so we'll go back Friday night after graduation as well, and because Kylie Iding runs the 3200 on Saturday no matter what, because that's run just as a final. And then hopefully we'll have a couple events qualified for the finals as well, that will kind of come down to what happens on Thursday.
Sounds great. Shane Kress, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time. Congratulations on the team title, and have fun at state.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
That is Shane Kress, the girls track and field coach at Litchfield, as they won the sectional title. Now, you can find full results of the qualifiers locally at WSMIRadio.com on the scoreboard. But congratulate Emma Crawford of North Mac. She won the 100-meter dash. Told you, Kendall Stewart, she won the 200 and the 400 for Litchfield. Olivia Thorman, she won that 3,200-meter run. Of course, Kylie came in second for Litchfield, but Olivia Thorman was the sectional champion at 3,200 meters. And then you look at the field events in the high jump, a lot of local flavor here. Carly Gwynn going, Casey Papin of Hillsborough qualified, Rebecca Hanna of North Mac also qualified in the high jump. Hannah Gibson was your sectional champion in the discus for Carthenville, so she's off to state. Southwestern has a couple of ISL birds, state-bound Amy D. Bachman in the triple jump, Emily Lois in the pole vault, and for Staunton, Grace Bukeski qualified for state in the triple jump. So, Sean, we have ran out of our extra time here. Good show today. We appreciated Sam Knox joining us for the important conversation about the officiating shortage.
Wow, that was great stuff.
Thanks to Michelle Smith, the Gillespie softball coach, for joining us, and Litchfield girls track and field coach Shane Crest. Sports Saturday is done. For Jennifer and Sean, I am Tim. You're listening to WQSMI FM, Litchfield, Hillsborough, Carthenville, and Greenville. Cardinal baseball today, 1220, AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. Have a great sporting weekend.